I was in a room in RTP, North Carolina, and John Chambers was in the room. And at that point, I was kind of plugging away with my career day in, day out. And somebody asked John the question about a competitor. Are you concerned about this competitor? And his answer, and it has changed my career, and I wish I could tell him this. His answer was, I don't worry about competition. I worry about staying on top of, in front of, industry transitions.
That's Rita Younger, practice lead of data center networking at a global technology service provider. In this episode, we're going to continue our series Women in Tech in honor of International Women's Month by bringing you this interview between Rita and Learning and Certifications Marketing Specialist Steph Garaffa. As you're most likely aware, AI is everywhere in the technology space. According to Forbes, quote, the AI market is projected to reach a staggering $407 billion by 2027, experiencing substantial growth from its estimated $86.9 billion revenue in 2022. And according to IBM, 35% of businesses have already embraced AI. With AI, analyzing massive quantities of historical and real-time telemetry data takes much less time. And this can result in better provisioning, deployment, maintenance, troubleshooting, and optimization. And AI is exactly what Rita and Steph talk about in this episode. In addition, Rita also talks about her experiences throughout her career as a woman and the roles that her mentorship and bonds with other women have played in her advancement.
So, Rita, can you share with us your journey into the field of networking technology and what inspired you to focus on network engineering?
I actually have an interesting story. I was a graphic design major in college, believe it or not, and IT really wasn't a field to go into back then. I graduated from Bradley University in 1988. So what I did is I started teaching basically how to use a computer back then. I started with Macintosh graphics. And then I just got more and more into it and got Microsoft certified, Novell certified, and eventually Cisco certified. And what I really clung to was Cisco. I really, really loved getting down to the bit level and IP addressing. And what I was seeing is it wasn't just a job, I was changing lives. People would come through my program and they would get their certification, CCNA, or even higher level, and they would, for their entire families, give them a better life because they went through the program and they got certified. So I really had a passion for it. I then began consulting. Cisco was one of my biggest clients when I was consulting, consulted for years, did some work for advanced services. And then because I have a passion for education, I taught a lot of the data center security, data center networking courses for advanced services. And then what I really loved was teaching for the CSAP program.
The Cisco Sales Associate Program, or CSAP, is a global year-long graduate program where you will learn how to become an associate sales engineer or associate sales representative. Basically, it's one of the most highly coveted early in career development programs, designed specifically for top university graduates from around the world who aspire to become the next generation of sales leaders at Cisco.
So I've done that. And again, just the inspiring the young minds and seeing them get into their careers as ASEs and then eventually Cisco SEs. During that time, I also found out I can't just consult, right? I needed to look for a regular full-time steady job. So at that point, I took a job as an SE at one of your top partners and then have moved to a role where I'm the lead for practice data center networking at your largest partner and absolutely love that job. And I still have that passion for learning, for education. And I'm thrilled when I see young people, especially young women or any underrepresented person in this field, go into this field and excel.
Wow, that's been quite the journey. How have you navigated the challenges and opportunities presented as a woman in this industry?
There have been challenges. I would absolutely be lying if I didn't say there were challenges. As a matter of fact, when I was first looking for a job outside of education, outside of teaching technology, I went on many, many interviews, and I would see my former students were working at a job at the same company that I was applying for, and I didn't look like anybody else, and I didn't get the call back. And I knew my stuff. The other thing is I felt like I've had to work harder when working for a partner. And this is years I've been working in the partner community. When I would walk into a meeting, there was an assumption made of who I was. Either I was in sales or I was an assistant. And I did a lot of what's called credentialing. And credentialing means I'd walk in the room with a firm handshake. I would say, this is Rita Younger. I'm a network engineer. This is my background. And quite frankly, that's exhausting because nobody should have to do that. Nobody should feel like they have to prove who they are because there's an assumption of who they are not.
Absolutely. Rita, can you share any specific examples of a time when someone made you feel that way? I think it's important for our listeners, especially people who are not women, for them to recognize things they might not be aware of.
Absolutely. Especially when I walked into a room with a salesperson, and instead of the salesperson, and this happens quite a bit, allowing me to introduce myself and who I am as part of the meeting, they attempt to introduce who I am and tend to stumble all over it, whereas I would like to speak for myself. I also have situations where I walk into a meeting, and although I'm there as the engineer, I'm there to explain the technology. The customer will address the questions to the salesperson in the room and their technical questions instead of to me. And in those instances, that question needs to be redirected back to the engineer, regardless of who the engineer is. If it's a technical question, that's what we're in the room for. So take advantage of us. That's our job. Our role is to understand technology, break it down, and ensure the customer can understand exactly what we're talking about.
I love that. Thank you so much. So let's move into technologies that are really coming forward and creating a new area of expertise for IT professionals. So let's talk about AI. Can you talk a bit about how you foresee AI playing a role in the evolution of the field of networking and networking security?
Oh yeah. I've been in this field for 30 years, so I've seen a lot of evolution in networking and networking security. And just like when voice over IP came out, a network had to perform differently than it did before it carried voice traffic. It had to have less jitter, less latency, QoS, all kinds of things needed to change to evolve the network to support voice over IP. Just the same, we now require a high-performance network in order to support AI ML, which is a really, really exciting time in history, by the way. For example, with AI ML, that traffic tends to have elephant flows, very large flows, and those flows have to be synchronized. And they're going to be long-lived flows, very different than what you see in a normal network. And until that last flow is through, the job is not complete. So not only do we have to have the higher speeds, we're seeing 800 gig being pushed to 1600 gig within the next 2 years, but the bandwidth by itself is not what gives us the high performance network. In order to be a high performing network, we need to have RDMA, which is probably an acronym you've heard, and that's remote direct access on those NICs so that the compute devices can read directly from that main memory, so they can bypass the NIC, the socket, the transport buffers that are running in the memory. What that's gonna do is that's gonna increase the performance of the network itself with a 90 to 96 decrease in the latency. So that's some pretty exciting stuff. That is really changing the way the networks need to perform. And so the high performance network, there's basically two varieties of that. InfiniBand, which is a really, really expensive solution, and there's really only one major vendor that supports InfiniBand. But what we're finding when talking to customers, when talking to people who are the early adopters of AI/ML, is that most of the time RoCE, which is RDMA over Converged Ethernet version 2, most of the time RoCE is going to be able to handle that traffic. So it's very versatile. It's not just for AI/ML. It's used for our mixed workloads. It's routable, so it includes layer 3. And like I said, most of our workloads, if it's anything less than 2000 GPUs, Rocky is going to be just fine. So anybody who's listening, who's in this field, be sure to keep that in mind when you're being sold on InfiniBand. Is that what you really need? And I guess the number one question to ask is, what are your workloads? What are your goals? What are the business drivers for your AI ML project? And then let's start talking about what is the technology that is needed in order to run that traffic back and forth.
It's an exciting time. There's so much growing and changing, and there's been such an increase in the network's capabilities. And you spoke a little bit to that. Building on that, from your experience, how can AI-driven tools and systems contribute to the creation of more robust and secure networking infrastructures?
Well, first of all, we need to have all of the high-performance network infrastructure in place, etc. Having that foundation, having that high-performance network in place, incredibly important. That is really going to contribute to all of us in this field, whether it's servers, whether it's storage, whether it's network. Now, network, if you think about it, has no inherent value on its own. The network doesn't store files. It doesn't process files. It's just the plumbing that passes files along. So we are evolving that network to be that high performance network with things such as Rocky. And what we're seeing the increase in bandwidth, and we're seeing new technologies that are coming out. Ultra Ethernet.
According to its overview document, quote, "The Ultra Ethernet Consortium brings together companies for industry-wide cooperation on interoperability and to build a complete Ethernet-based communication stack architecture that best matches the rapidly evolving AI HPC workloads at scale and provides for best-in-class functionality, performance, interoperability, and TCO, as well as developer and end-user friendliness," end quote.
There's a consortium working on that right now to really push that envelope on Ethernet networks. So very exciting time for all of us in this field.
Absolutely. Now, what steps should the industry take to prepare for the increased complexity AI is introducing? Now, we can start with the hands-on IT professional going all the way up to the organization, however you want to break that down.
Excellent question. The amount of misinformation about what AI ML is that's out to the general public is just outstanding. The amount of misinformation, I remember everything from the Screen Actors Guild strike saying that AI ML was going to take over the jobs of the writers. Absolutely not true. I think in general, we need a lot of education about what AI ML is, what it is not, and how it can really benefit people. The number one issue we're facing today is the amount of talent shortage. And so for those of us who are already in this field and who are understanding it, it's our job to educate others. And I mentioned earlier, education is a real passion of mine. And so for all my colleagues, anybody in this position, I strongly, strongly recommend that you go to, you know, even your local high school, even down to the middle school, do some volunteer education. What is this exciting new field, and how is it going to benefit you today? How is it going to benefit companies, organizations? How is it going to benefit the general public? It's really important to be able to understand that. And then it's also important for us to be out there presenting ourselves as, look, we are the face of this technology. Do we look so odd? Does it look like something that you don't want to be a part of, or you feel you couldn't be a part of? I think that's a really, really important thing. Now, that education includes educating, in my case, because I work for a partner, customers. What is AI ML? What are some of the use cases? And how are you thinking that it may benefit you? And we start with, what is that business driver? What do you want to accomplish? What are your goals? What can you take out of the human hands and give it to AI ML to make your human employees more productive and to accomplish more? Allow them to be innovative. So really, it's not artificial intelligence that does the innovation. It's the human mind. We use AI in order to help make that innovation take place and have it happen quicker, have it happen more simply, so that we can remain innovative and productive.
You have such a tenacity, this vigor for learning, and it's so inspiring. I'm wondering, how do you maintain that sense of excitement and readiness in the face of emerging technologies like AI ML? Something that's evolving so quickly, which comes with the territory in tech, but how do you keep this sense of go-getter mentality?
I wish you could see the smile on my face right now. I wish everyone could see it because this is my absolute favorite question. And it comes down to a point in my career, and this was probably, I don't know, 20 years ago. I was in a room in RTP, North Carolina, and John Chambers was in the room. And at that point, I was kind of plugging away with my career day in, day out. And somebody asked John the question about a competitor. Are you concerned about this competitor? And his answer, and it has changed my career, and I wish I could tell him this. His answer was, I don't worry about competition. I worry about staying on top of, in front of, industry transitions. And at that point, that changed my career from writing ACLs all day or doing stare and compare to getting on top of what was innovative in that day. That was just before UCS came out. It was in the days of Nexus. It was in the days before VBlock. Then I became on Twitter, I'm SDN girl, on top of SDN, and began talking about these technologies before the technologies were commonplace. And that's what really changed my career and gave me that drive to keep learning and keep striving to be in front of industry transitions. So, John Chambers or Wayne Gretzky, skate where the puck is going. Absolute mottos to live by, in my opinion.
Yeah, was it Wayne Gretzky who said you miss 100% of the shots you don't take?
I believe that was him, and that is so, so true. Absolutely. Take a shot, take a chance. Seeing these young women, I have one that I'm mentoring right now, and she's a very young former college cheerleader and who is a young SE, and she has more tenacity. She will show up when she wasn't invited because she knows she should have been included. And I'm like, at 24 years old, she is going places. So yeah, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Absolutely.
Yeah, and having the opportunity to mentor somebody in your position, I mean, the impact that you have on somebody, especially at that stage in their career, it's incredible. I'm thinking you must have some kind of personal strategy or particular resource that you go to that helps you stay ahead.
I really don't. Deep down, I don't look like it. I don't act like it. But deep down, I'm a nerd. I research. I look at, you know, what are the upcoming trends for 2025 in technology? And then I latch onto one and then I research the heck out of it. And then I write about it and, you know, forcing myself to write about things. You have to learn to be able to write about things. Doing a lot of blogging and things like that. I used to do a lot more because I had more time. But yeah, really just trying to stay on top of it.
Yeah, you just reminded me, you know, there's that quote, those who can't do, teach. Well, I believe the other part of that is those who can't do, teach until you can do, because you learn by teaching somebody else. So we always talk about the importance of community and supporting others. Really, when you're supporting somebody else, you get just as much back from that experience.
You know, that saying, I feel like, is what held me back early in my career, because I had been teaching. And I have been teaching plenty of men who are now the CIOs and CTOs of major corporations, and they were my students at one point. Yet, early in my career, I couldn't get a job as a network engineer because my background was in teaching network engineers. It made no sense to me whatsoever. I also remember very, very early in my career, I'm whiteboarding something, and as I'm whiteboarding it, in front of students, the light bulb goes off in me and I go, wow, I really, really understand this. Yeah, it's been just a phenomenally rewarding career, that's for sure.
And it sounds like you've fought your way through, whether it's been your excitement for the field of technology or just the desire to push your career forward. It sounds like you've really kept at it and pushed.
Yeah, and you know, I speak to a lot of women in technology and a lot of those of us who, I mean, we may have kicked at the glass ceiling and put a few chips in it so that this next generation can run straight through it. But one of the things I feel like us, kind of the older generation of network, female network engineers have in common is before every meeting we went to, we might be in a hotel spending that evening before making sure that we were more prepared than we possibly needed to be, because we always felt we didn't have the luxury of saying, I don't know, or let me check on that. We never felt we had that luxury that some of our peers may have had, because it was assumed when they walked in the room that they were the network engineer and that they knew what they were talking about. It has been difficult. There's no way I can say it has not been difficult. We missed out on some of those dinners and going out for drinks, you know, while you're traveling, because we were back in the hotel room studying and preparing for the next day. But you know what? It made me who I am today. So I can't regret any of that.
I'm with you, and I completely relate to what you're saying. Going into any situation, feeling the need to be so prepared, visualizing the perfect situation, you know, from start to finish, making sure you're completely covered for anything that comes your way. I never thought about it, but that does come with being a woman, because you feel like you have so much more to prove. So the night before in that hotel room, did you do scenarios? How did you prepare each other? I'm curious about that.
I was normally in the room by myself because, you know, there just aren't that many of us, but just kind of coming up with every possible scenario that it could be. And when I was traveling internationally with jet lag, staying up till the wee hours trying to do that, boy, that made it extra, extra hard, but I got through it.
For our listeners, let's say that we have some women listening and they're preparing to go into their first interview for a tech job, or they're doing a public speaking opportunity. What would be your top 5 pro tips for that listener?
First of all, you've got this. And today, it's a heck of a lot easier than it was before. But go in there with as much possible confidence as you can muster. If you have to stand backstage before a speaking engagement and make yourself feel like Superwoman, do it. Whatever you need to do. And the confidence is not just in what you're saying. It's the way you carry yourself. It's your voice. It's your inflection. It's your excitement and positivity. We've all been in presentations where someone drones on and on and on. Doesn't matter how much of a genius they are, they're not going to hold anyone's attention if they don't put their personality into that presentation. So I know that's kind of a combination of things, but yeah, be as prepared as possible. Know that something could go wrong, and that's perfectly okay. If you stumble over a word, who cares? We're all human. Just be confident and be positive.
I love that. Sometimes for me, when I have that sense of performance anxiety, I get very nervous. I can barely speak. My voice starts to shake. And I always try to tell myself that what I'm talking about is bigger and more important than how people view me. And that always helps me get through.
And practice makes perfect. I mean, back in the day when I was teaching, you know, I was in front of a group of people every day. So I could go in front of a stadium full of people. Don't ask me to sing the national anthem, but I could go in front of a stadium full of people and speak. Definitely, it's practice.
All right, let's go back to AI a little bit. So one of the concerns with AI tools like generative AI is around the inherent biases that can surface from the usage of the tools. So in your view, what are some of the ways that AI can be harnessed to foster a more inclusive and diverse environment within the field of networking and networking security?
Interesting question, because with AI and machine learning, it is all subject to the biases of the human. Because where did the content originally come from? It came from us. As a matter of fact, I was with my daughter last night. She's an SE and we did some experiments. So she's my little mini me, also an SE. And we went to a AI application that does images. And it was her idea, this one. She said, create 5 pictures of network engineers working on the wireless network at the Olympic Games. Those 5 pictures, any guesses what they look like?
Not us.
They did not look like my daughter and I, that's for darn sure. Yes, they were all very stereotypical. And I thought, well, where's it getting these images from? It's getting these images from the internet, of course. And that's the information that's out there on the internet. So for those of us building AI ML solutions for our businesses, or even for general consumption, we need to consider that garbage in equals garbage out. And so any biases that you put in as it goes through its learning, guess what's gonna come out of it?
AI bias is something that IBM discussed in its blog post called Shedding Light on AI Bias with Real World Examples. In that post, the IBM Data and AI team state, quote, AI bias, also referred to as machine learning bias or algorithm bias, refers to AI systems that produce biased results that reflect and perpetuate human biases within a society, including historical and current social inequality. Bias can be found in the initial training data, the algorithm, or the predictions the algorithm produces. When bias goes unaddressed, it hinders people's ability to participate in the economy and society. It also reduces AI's potential. Businesses cannot benefit from systems that produce distorted results and foster mistrust. End quote.
So we didn't have any idea AI ML would exist. We didn't even use the term unconscious bias back when the internet started. So if the only source is what is out there, then that's the bias you're going to get. I went through a similar thing with a large language model that's publicly available, generative AI program, and I said, what is the day-to-day job of a commercial pilot? Guess what gender it used when describing the job? No surprise, right? You know, that was the same type of thing where it was using what was out there on the internet. And sure, we see plenty of female pilots today. I mean, not tons, but they're there. And so we want to make sure if we're building these applications for a company, that the information that we're putting into it is not subject to biases. That's something that is our responsibility to do. Now, when it comes to AI ML, how can it be used to kind of take away some of those gender biases? Well, if we think about some jobs, if you have applications, you have resumes, CVs, and it goes into an AI ML machine that strips out anything that would indicate ethnicity, gender, age, and then you're just comparing credentials when vetting those resumes, then you're going to have more of an opportunity to be unbiased in the selection of candidates. And I absolutely believe the most qualified person is the person for the job. Absolutely. So being able to take that out and remove that gender or nationality identifying information would be really great to have. So it's really important that all of our systems are trained using a diverse set of data so that it's not discriminating. So there is no unconscious bias of the tool. Now that seems strange to say, unconscious bias of a tool. But because those tools are designed with a human, there tends to be some unconscious bias. The other thing is that language translation that can be done with AI ML is going to allow a lot of people who maybe English is not their first language to be able to work and interact better with those who English is their first language, or maybe they don't speak English at all. But we can have a lot more collaboration between people from all over the world using AI. So lots of great things about AI ML. We certainly don't need to be afraid of it, but we need to educate the general public in what it is. And using simple examples. When I speak to high schoolers, I break it down to a very popular streaming program that they probably all use on their TVs. And I say, how does it know what it's offering for you or what it thinks you want to watch next? And I break it down that way and put it into terms that they go, oh, wow, that's how that predictive analytics is taking place. Wow, that's some cool stuff. So anyway, lots of exciting things today with our newest transition.
You touched on something with how AI is learning from humans themselves. So it's important with when we interact with AI tools that we're keeping in mind that it's learning from us, that if we have an unconscious bias, it's going to pick up on that direction or that undertone. So looking at how you're navigating the complexities of AI in your day-to-day work, what impact do you think AI will have on the future roles of women in networking? And I'm going to expand on that a little bit and say, when we're interacting with these tools, how can we keep in mind the impact that we're having and what can we do to drive this movement where we're embracing women and any gender, any nationality, we're embracing all people and leveling the playing field?
Yeah, and it is very important that we keep that in mind. And I think it can be very much overlooked. I hadn't really thought about gender bias, you know, or nationality bias with AI, ML. And then when I started really looking into it, I realized that this is definitely a responsibility that we all need to take on. As far as how I think it can help women in general, this goes back to my earlier example. And I'm still meeting with customers and I still spend way too much time preparing for those meetings just in case I'm challenged. Well, one of the things that we can see AI ML do is we can see it take some of those tasks that are those in the grind tasks away from us. I mean, I was going through a spreadsheet the other day and I had duplicates and I had all kinds of things. And I finally was just like, okay, there's got to be an AI program that can help me with this. Because why am I spending hours doing something? I'm an engineer, for gosh sakes. Why am I in a spreadsheet doing this kind of tedious task? And I was able to find a way to do it using a AI tool. So when it comes to, in particular, women, mothers, even fathers, work-life balance is so important. And if we can use these new tools to take some of those tedious tasks away so that we can focus on performing our job role the best we can and not working till the wee hours of the night or over the weekend, I think it's going to have tremendous benefit to all of us. And I don't think it's ever going to replace humans. I mean, look at, you know, scanning a radiologist. It might do that initial scan, AI may, but it's still going to require anything that looks suspect is going to require a human to look at it and say, you know, this is something there that we need to take a further look at.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think that AI will steal anybody's jobs, especially in tech, especially since you have to double check everything that AI generates for you.
Just to touch on Steph's point here, we wanted to mention that in a brief primer published by Cisco on artificial intelligence and machine learning, Cisco states, quote, "As networks grow increasingly larger, the vast programmability of devices and flexibility in their configuration leads to unimaginable levels of complexity. A network analytics engine driven by artificial intelligence and machine learning, AIML, is simply the only way for humans to navigate this complexity. This helps explain why we need AIML, the basic concepts of AIML related to network analytics, and the role they play in intent-based networking." End quote. This is one of the reasons why Cisco has partnered with NVIDIA to deliver AI infrastructure solutions for the data center that are easy to deploy and manage, enabling massive computing power that enterprises need to succeed in the AI era. So it's clear that AI presents a tremendous opportunity for growth in our industry to meet the rapid increases in demand.
Are there any tips that you would like to share with women who are trying to make it in the field of technology, maybe drawing from your experience, people you've mentored or taught?
What I've found is mentorship has to be an organic thing, especially with women. We need to all be comfortable reaching out to those that are our peers, those that are just coming up in the field, and reaching out to them, have lunch with them, set up a call with them, spend time getting to know them, what their dreams are, what their goals are. We did, through my work, have a couple of kind of formalized mentorship things where they did a mentorship matchup. And I never found that that really worked at all. It has to be a very organic thing. So I would recommend to anyone, regardless of age, who's been around the industry a while, reach out to those just coming into the industry. If you have a new hire program, I know my company, WWT, does. I know Cisco does. I intentionally will seek out the women who are coming through that program and say, hey, if you're in town, let's get together. Let's set up a WebEx. And some of them I only talked to once, but some of them, like the woman I told you with all the tenacity, the former collegiate cheerleader, now young engineer, we have bonded and she has questions. I have questions for her. We don't hesitate to contact each other. I had another young woman who reached out to me and she was new in her role, but she had been around the company for a while. And she said, I almost didn't call you. I was too intimidated. And I said, intimidated? You've never met me before. And she goes, yeah, but you know, you with that engineering background, I was just intimidated. And I was like, don't be silly. So women who are new to this field, who are changing roles, who want to get into this field, don't be intimidated. Reach out. We are here to help. I've never met another woman in this field who snubbed me, turned her back. We all just want to help each other. We're stronger together.
It's true. And I was thinking that really the impact that organizations have is profound for women in the workforce, especially. So what message would you like to send to organizations who are working to fight gender bias and empower more women in the tech workforce?
That's a great question. And I think what we need to keep in mind is, you know, there's the diversity and inclusion movements, but more important than that, with that inclusion is the belonging. Know that when a woman is on a team and she's the only woman on the team, she needs to feel included. So the inside jokes need to stop. And she also needs to be in meetings. She's going to have a softer voice. Now, this is nothing against women. It happens to me all the time, and I don't think I have a soft voice at all. But if I'm on a WebEx, for instance, and there's six men and myself, I seem to not be able to get a word in edgewise. So for organizations, those in leadership, whether it's the woman or anybody that's on that call who is not speaking up, that doesn't mean they don't want to speak up. That means they're probably, every time they try to speak, someone's talking over them or they don't feel comfortable. So please, 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 if you're in leadership, and I've even coached some of my own leadership on this, make sure that everybody that's in that room is represented and it's not just the one with the loudest voice.
I have to say, I think that you have such an incredible wealth of experience with mentoring others, but we didn't touch on such a critical aspect of your personal journey. And I want to talk more about your daughter, Corey. Can you share a little bit about how have you led and mentored her into this field? You said that she's your mini-me, but I'm curious what challenges she's experienced that you've helped her work through and helped her to grow her career.
You know, I have my secret for all parents in technology. When my kids turned 21, the first two, and I have a third that just turned 21, I bought them the guest pass to go to Cisco Live. And on that guest pass, and now it will be the young professional pass, I gave them jobs such as, if you're going to go to Cisco Live and go to all the parties and the concert, you need to go into the world of solutions and you need to talk to four different vendors and come back at the end of the day and tell me what they do. And that was their jobs. And that was how they got their ticket from me to Cisco Live. And I know everybody does not have the opportunity to do that, but that was where my kids both changed their majors. And my third one, even though he hasn't been to Cisco Live yet, this is his year, he has already changed his major. And then they kind of get bit by that bug. I mean, I've always thought that Cisco should have a program for young professionals to come in for a lower price to get bit by that bug too, so that they can begin their journey into this field. Now, I mentioned my son, he now is a practice manager in cybersecurity, and then my daughter, who's an SE. And both of them have had their days where they're like, it was an awful day, Mom. Can you believe this bill of material was wrong, but I was not the one who created it, but I got blamed for it. Or I had somebody assigned on this project and that person got in a car accident and what am I going to do? It's going to disappoint the customer. And they call me and I just let them vent. And I'm like, it will be okay. And then the next day I hear from them and they're like, this is the greatest job I've ever had. So I think, you know, and that's for everyone. We all hit those walls. We all have those bad days. And you need to look at, you know, out of so many bad days, you have so many, many more good and rewarding days. So that is how I help them. I also get the occasional phone call. And when they're talking to somebody about ACI, for instance, I get a phone call. Can you explain this a little bit more to me? Because I have this meeting tomorrow. And that's kind of a cool thing for me. And again, most people, I don't honestly know another mother, daughter that are both involved in this career. I hope there's more. I mean, if you're out there, let me know. And I would love to connect with them. We make a big presence at Cisco Live as kind of the mother, daughter team. And my daughter had a shirt made up and had stickers made up when Barbie was like the hottest thing, which was just this fall, that said, this Barbie is a systems engineer.
Oh, I love that. That's a really cool thing. So going forward for your daughter, how would you advise her to think about her career development? Next steps.
We have this discussion all the time. Leadership or individual contributor, moving to principal. And we go back and forth with, and she goes back and forth with this all the time. You know, I give her my advice and my thoughts, but the decision is ultimately hers. And I've also had advised her, she's on so many different committees at Cisco. She's always being asked to join another committee or get involved in this or that, and she embraces each and every one of them. I definitely have recommended that. She was on the Next Gen panel at Cisco Live this year. You know, she's submitting to speak and all kinds of things. And I just encourage her to keep that up because I'm like, you're young. You get up on that stage, people remember you. They remember your name. I mean, even as long as I've been in this, I'll be walking around and somebody go, "Hey, Rita." I'm like, I have no idea who this person is. He's like, "You spoke in Grand Rapids, Michigan one time." I was like, whoa, that was like 15 years ago. How do you even remember? Again, because you stand out, because you look different than everybody else in this career. And so my advice to her is she doesn't have to make that decision right now, whether she goes into leadership or continues to be an individual contributor. She just needs to keep making the connections, make a name for herself, and be the absolute best she can at her job.
Rita, can you adopt me?
I don't know.
Everyone needs a tech mom like Rita.
That's it for our interview with Rita. If you'd like to hear more of this series from others about their experiences in the tech industry and about updates to the evolving world of Cisco certifications, please subscribe to the Cisco Learning Network podcast. And be sure to visit the Cisco Learning Network at learningnetwork.cisco.com to find more information about artificial intelligence in the tech field, as well as all kinds of resources like exam topics, training videos, and an entire community of others who can help you on your learning journey. Thanks for listening.